Welcome to Always Hold On to Superboy. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 1988 to 1992. I am your host, Zach Moore. And this week, we're talking about the 17th episode of Superboy's second season, Brimstone.
I trust you had no problem finding my humble abode.
Humble? Maybe from the outside.
Yes, well, appearances can be deceiving. Now, how can I help you?
It's Superboy. Something's happened and he's turned into this...
Becoming like that madman.
Yeah.
I was afraid something like that might happen.
Then you'll be able to help?
If I can get to him before nightfall. Otherwise, it'll be too late.
What are all those powders for?
Some of these powders can cure Superboy. And others can kill him.
Wait. I thought you said you were going to save him. What are you doing?
Mixing magic. Magicians never tell their secrets, young lady. Trust me.
Brimstone is the 17th episode of Superboy's second season. It aired on February 10th, 1990, was written by Mark Carlin and Andrew Helfer, and directed by Andre Gutfriend. Now, Mark Carlin is just a legend in comic books. He's a longtime Superman writer and editor. He actually won the Eisner Award for Best Editor in 1994 for the Superman comic books. He played an integral role in the Death of Superman storyline in the 90s, and he was a regular writer and contributor to Superboy the TV show. So, I mean, this is an episode that he co-wrote with Andrew Helfer, who was an Eisner Award winner in his own right, who won the next year, 1995, for Best Anthology, The Big Book of Urban Legends. So, I mean, these are some legit comic book writers here putting their talents to Superboy. It's very interesting that, you know, there's not a lot of crossover between, you know, at this time, the comic book guys and the movie guys. I mean, this is something that Kevin Smith talks about all the time. You know, back in the 90s, he's well known for talking about his dealings with John Peters and Superman Lives, the Tim Burton movie with Nicolas Cage. And, you know, he's like, look, guys, you know, you have experts on these characters working down the street here at DC Comics. Give them a call, right? Put these guys on the project. And, you know, that's what they did on Superboy, right? You got Mike Carlin here, and then, of course, Andrew Helfer writing lots of episodes and writing this episode in particular together. So, anyway, the episode starts out at the end of a college baseball game. We don't see the field quite yet. We just see the stands, and people are kind of shuffling out. It's a very small crowd, but at the same time, being a college baseball fan my whole life, I will say that it's not that unrealistically small. Because for whatever reason, college baseball, well, first of all, people don't know it exists. Everybody knows about college basketball, college football. I mean, those are huge, just staples of American sports, right? We got March Madness, of course, which is in the process of wrapping up as we speak. And then, obviously, the college football. I mean, the bowl season is just, you know, an event for American sports fans. So, but college baseball, you know, much like, you know, it's lost its luster, I guess, much like baseball itself, as far as the general public goes, because, you know, baseball is my favorite sport I used to play. So I understand why people who don't have that same perspective I do, wouldn't be as into it. You know, some say it's boring. You know, I'd say it's, boring is relative. I mean, I find soccer boring because you just go back and forth and can end in a tie. And, oh, look, oh, somebody blocked a ball and they almost scored. And that's so 0-0 tie, everybody. See, I mean, I can be cynical about soccer in the same way people can be cynical about baseball. I mean, you can be cynical and negative about every sport if you really want to, because, hey, they're just games. You can always pick holes in games. All that to say, this crowd is leaving, and then Lana and Andy are selling some fake kryptonite. I'm not sure how Andy got a hold of this and why he is... decided this is the best place to sell it, or I mean, they're not Girl Scout cookies. You just can't set up a table anywhere. But but that's what they're acting like. I guess campus security doesn't really mind. So yeah, he's trying to peddle. He's selling them for $5.98, which is a very arbitrary price, especially in the times when you would have to have exact change. You know, I don't think they've got a. Well, they certainly don't have Squared going on plugging to their smartphones. So. I don't know what kind of pay system they have, people writing them checks or what, but he does say he'll settle for $5, which is probably a smart move. Somebody can just hand you a $5 bill. Lana seems to have been tricked into helping him with this. He had told her that he needed help with a project. This is not what she expected, but he says he's a businessman, and he's doing business here. And what better place to do business than at the than the stands of a college baseball game. So as the crowd kind of shuffles out, this well, this guy in basically a Constantine costume, you know, just a raincoat, jacket, trench coat, I should say, and a red tie comes. He comes in. He's stumbling in. He's pushing people out of the way. He is kind of a it's not quite Freddy Krueger by any means, but a very decayed looking face. And he's pushing people over. It's actually pretty amusing, unintentionally so, as he works his way through the crowd. He gets up to he gets up to the kryptonite table, which gets knocked over, of course, and he comes up to Andy, and he scratches Andy on the throat, because he's got some pretty gnarly, nasty nails. And I don't know what this is about Superman in the 80s and nails, but we all remember Nuclear Man from Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, and you know, he's got these nails, and he scratches Superman and makes him sick, and we'll get to that later in the episode here, because these long nails continue to play a role here, but Andy is legit bleeding from his throat, so I would be pretty concerned about what's going on here. Lana comes over to him, and he's holding his throat, and the Constantine cosplayer here is holding his head and shouting, "Get out of my head," and he's very upset about what's going on. It's implied that he is not in control of the situation. And let's take a minute to talk about the actor who's playing this Constantine cosplayer. He has no name. He's only credited as Maniac, but he's played by the actor Mark McCauley. And we might as well read in this episode Miami Vice, because Mark McCauley was in several episodes of Miami Vice, and he's not the only guest star this episode of Superboy that was on Miami Vice. Well, we'll get into that soon enough. He has an incredibly long list of credits. First of all, this is not his first episode of Superboy. He was in Revenge of the Alien, Part 1, as a crook. This episode, as I said, Maniac. And then he goes on to play Lee Woods in A Wish for Armageddon later on in the series. So he's got that going on. And he was a recurring character on Swamp Thing, the TV series, as Sheriff Andrew. So, and yeah, as we talk about every week on this podcast, people always overlook the fact in the late 80s and early 90s, DC had it going on TV as well. Everybody says, oh, look at the CW. They got Arrow. They got The Flash. They got Legends of Tomorrow. Well, hey, I got news for you. In the early 90s, all right, DC had Superboy. It had Swamp Thing. It had The Flash. I mean, DC was making it happen on the small screen. And then, of course, you know, the Batman movies, Tim Burton's franchise at its height in the late 80s and early 90s. So, so Sheriff Adams on Swamp Thing was Mark McCauley's character. I mean, he was on Matlock. He was on Sequest. He was on Flipper, the 90s remake of Flipper, a TV show. He was on Walker, Texas Ranger, Nash Bridges. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. He was in the movie Miami Vice, which we'll talk about again later. You know, small roles here and there in these bigger movies, but you know, My Bloody Valentine, Marley and Me. I mean, it continues to be in movies that you would know. I mean, movies that you would know. 12 Years a Slave. I mean, come on. And then you know, he was in probably most recently. He was in Burn Notice as Agent Harris. He's a recurring character on there, but I mean, wow. I mean, what a list for this guy. But anyway, he's doing his thing, causing chaos here, and the security guards at the baseball stadium approach him, and they shoot him, straight up shoot him in the back. He falls over, and then we get the classic sting of the music when the when a maniac here, the Constantine cosplayer, gets up. By the way, during all this ruckus, we do get to see a couple glimpses of the field, which allegedly a game had just been played at. But no game had been played at this field. You can easily see the puddles of water on the infield. This was an off day. They clearly just used the field at the University of Central Florida to film this. And, you know, and then Constantine cosplayer here, he jumps what looked to me into the dugout or whatever, but nobody follows him. And then somebody says, oh, he jumped into the sewer. So, but you just see this... this pile of people, small pile, but a pile nonetheless, of people strung throughout the stands, who have been pushed over or scratched or whatnot by the Constantine cosplayer. And we cut to commercial, and then we come back, and we have people getting loaded into ambulances, and then Clark shows up, being all shucks and gee and oh golly, wants to know what's going on. He talks to Andy's on a stretcher here. He's about to get put into the ambulance, and he's talking to Lana. And, of course, Clark does, he sees there's a bandage on Andy's neck, so he does his x-ray vision, and he sees it's just a scratch, just a flesh wound. And, of course, he does the famous, at least there's no internal injuries. That's what I heard the paramedics say, you know, because, you know, Gerard Christopher here, he taps into Christopher Reeve's Clark Kent more than any other, interpretation of the character, before or since. Just over the top bumbling nerd, but hey, if you want to see it as him, he's still trying to figure this out. He hasn't been doing this dual identity for a while. You know, he's testing the ropes. So I'm not gonna be too hard on him. And you know, there is a clear difference between his Clark and his Superman. Say what you will about the absurdity of his over the top nerdiness, but there is a clear difference between when Gerard Christopher is Clark and when he is Superman. So he shuffles off through the crowd here, and then we get, I don't know how to describe this guy, but we get basically Blade pulls up on a motorcycle, Blade, Shaft, whatever, just a cool brother, all right. He's on a motorcycle. He pulls up to the police tape here. He steps off, and who is it but Philip Michael Thomas? Now, if you don't know who Philip Michael Thomas is, he was Detective Rico Tubbs in Miami Vice, the TV show from the 80s. So, I mean, there was Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas. I mean, they were the two. Now, in the 2006 movie version of Miami Vice, Don Johnson's character is played by Colin Farrell, and Philip Michael Thomas's character is played by Jamie Foxx. So, you know, so we have... that's what we have here. So that's what I'm saying. This is the Miami Vice episode. Philip Michael Thomas, that's what he's best known for. Okay, Detective Ricardo Tubbs. And this was really his first thing right after Miami Vice. Miami Vice wrapped in 1990. And he's here playing the character Brimstone in this episode. And then he's also in a Zorro TV show in 1990. I was not aware that there was a Zorro TV show. Ran for four seasons, apparently. I had no idea. my Zorro is Antonio Banderas, so so just another comic book. I mean, I wouldn't say Zorro. I mean, he's not. I mean, he's more of a legend. You know, I don't know the history of Zorro as much, say Bruce Wayne would, for example. But Zorro, I mean, he was the Batman of his day, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. But anyway, Philip Michael Thomas here, he was in an episode of Swamp Thing as well. So I guess these guys, you know, much like in the CWWB era, where you see people who've been on Smallville, Supernatural, you know, that whole run of shows, you know, the stable of actors. Looks like in the 80s and 90s, I mean, if you were on Superboy, you were probably on Miami Vice and Swamp Thing as well. Yeah, I mean, he really hasn't done much in recent years. I mean, Philip Michael Thomas was he's done some voices in Grand Theft Auto Vice City, so I mean that's a takeoff on Miami Vice, obviously. So he's playing into that popularity. He was in a movie called Miami Shakedown in 1993. So I wonder what exactly their angle was there. If that was some kind of let's get the guy from Miami Vice and put Miami in the title and see what we can do. But anyway, all that to say, Philip Michael Thomas has shown up acting like he owns the joint, and he's stopped by these police officers at the crime scene. Right, he's like, "Sir, you can't go in there." And he takes off his sunglasses and just gives this guy a look, and it's just, the camera zooms in on him. He gives him this wide-eyed stare, kind of some hypnotic vampire thing. And then the sheriff, there's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir, go ahead." And he goes about his business. The music here is ridiculous. It's like some kind of mystical, almost Native American sounding music. So I'm not really sure what they're trying to say about Brimstone here at this point. Like you don't know what his intentions are. I mean, he shows up like the T-800 basically from Terminator. He shows up on a motorcycle. He's wearing black. He's got a black leather jacket on. He's got sunglasses on, you know. But he has this blue powder in this little glass bowl. And he starts to go around to the injured people and pour this powder in their mouths. And so he pours some in Andy's mouth. And Lana tries to stop. He's like, "Hey, what are you doing to my friend there?" And he gives her the stare. And she's like, "Oh, I trust you." And then he pours some of this blue powder in Andy's mouth. And he's good to go. But as Brimstone goes from person to person here, Lana starts questioning him. And he explains that all these people have been injured by a person under the spell of an evil proto. And he explains to Lana, because she's like, "What's a proto?" Because that's my question. I mean, you know, couldn't you just said the warlock or a wizard or a witch or something? He explains that a proto is a sorcerer with the power to control life or death. But if these people who had been scratched and injured had not been cured by this blue powder within 24 hours, their souls would have been damned forever. Which is, you know, pretty extreme. So, and that, obviously, that's what happened to the Constantine cosplayer there. There's no escape for him. That's why he's going around doing this person's bidding. So Lana, you know, eventually asks, "Who are you?" And he pulls out this business card, and it has his name Brimstone on it. And then, in classic 80s style, the video freezes, and then a phone number appears on the bottom of the card. Like it's supposed to be like, "See, guys, he's magic. Why he could have just handed her a normal card?" The video freezes to have the special effect on it, because obviously they probably had the technology, but it was too expensive to do it that way, so the freeze frame helped him out. But all that aside, you know, to answer her question, "Who are you?" Brimstone says, "A friend," which is exactly what Superman tells Lois Lane in Superman the movie, and I have to think that was intentional by the writers of this episode, being, you know, so steeped in Superman lore as they were writing comic books. So that's a nice callback to Superman the movie. Brimstone walks off, and then Clark stumbles back in, and he's like, "Who was that guy?" Lana's like, "His name's Brimstone," and they look at the card, and that's pretty much all we see from that scene. And then we see Constantine cosplayer, you know, the maniac. His makeup has gotten worse. His injuries have accelerated. Face has deteriorated. He's stumbling through this, like, abandoned building, pleading for this voice to get out of his head, and he just wants escape from the control of you know, the sorcerer here, the proto. And then we see, gosh, it's like a, you know, guys, it's like a Power Ranger thing. We see this crystal ball and these hands with like long nails. "Now you're under my control," and it's a poor choices were made, directing and acting in the situation. And then we basically, you know, we get the sheriffs here, the sheriff squad coming in. There's four of them. They come in with their guns drawn. But Superboy flies down. I'm not sure how he found Constantine cosplayer or what. That's just because we just saw Clark and Lana look in that business card. There is no transition of any logical point A to point B here. But hey, they only got, you know, it's a half hour show, right? There's not a lot of time, for this connective tissue. He's just got to go from point to point. So Superboy confronts this guy. And sorcerer, right, in his head's like, "Ooh, scratch him, kill him, put it under my control," and he's saying it just like that. It's so terrible. It's just, and there's like a, next to this crystal ball, I looked and I was like, is this a seagull? I don't know what it is, but there's this stuffed bird, and it's white, but it's, like, fuzzy? So I'm not sure, like, I'm not sure what kind of bird that is, but, I mean, it's just set decoration, I guess, but it's just so bad, guys. It's so bad. It's so cheesy. But anyway, Superboy's fighting this guy, and hey, we all know that Superman is vulnerable to magic, and, you know, there's all this sorcery and stuff going on, so it's reasonable that Superboy would be affected this way. So he's fighting this guy, and this guy scratches him on the face. But then, you know, as this confrontation is going down, we've seen Brimstone getting his crossbow ready, putting some powders in there, doing his thing, getting ready. So right when Superboy goes down, Constantine cosplayer is about to finish him off, Brimstone shows up, classic T-800 style, on his motorcycle. Shoots Constantine cosplayer in the chest and kills him. And he's like, "Thank God I'm free. I'm sorry," you know. And then he dies. And then, gosh, the makeup. I mean, I guess in the 80s, the makeup was okay for a TV show, but I don't know. It just looked kind of ridiculous. But you know, the sheriff squad who had been there with Superboy watching all this go down, like, "Superboy, you're bleeding," and he's like, "Oh, wow. I'm okay, though," and he flies off. And again with the long nails scratching Superman in the 80s. This was a huge thing in Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, when Nuclear Man scratched Superman. And here it is again. I mean, it's Superboy. So I wonder if that's a precedent for that in the comics somewhere. But the scene ends here with Proto putting, since the confrontation is over, he puts a little sheet over the crystal ball. He's done watching what's going on. He monologues to himself. "Soon, Superboy will be mine, and Brimstone will die." And he says it just like that. It's awful. I mean, and then we see his face, right? And gosh, he looks like such a stock magician character. He's got this goatee working. He's got the long curly hair. He's got, it's not really a turban, but it's a spherical hat. A frilly shirt. I mean, it's exactly what you see like in a carnival house, right? A very cheap carnival house. And you know, I think he's doing kind of a Bela Lugosi thing, like Dracula. I mean, he actually does look kind of like Bela Lugosi, honestly. Like if they needed, they were gonna reenact some, you know, like an Ed Wood, the Tim Burton film. They had Martin Landau be, you know, Bela Lugosi. Like, this guy could have been the younger Bela Lugosi, because he really has that look to him. And I think he's channeling that performance. But again, he has long nails too, and it's just something about long nails just creeps me out, especially on men, right? But cut to the commercial, cut back. It's the next morning, I guess, and Clark, who has gone to sleep fully clothed, is waking up to an alarm clock, and in a classic Superman fashion. And then I know our friends from Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, will get kicked out of this, but seriously, the alarm clock's going off. Clark reaches over and he crushes it. It's like, come on, is this a daily routine? How often does this happen? Superman, show a little self-control. I know in this situation, he's got Proto laughing in his head, right? So he's a little more on edge. I mean, he's on the influence here, but really, learn from your mistakes, Superman, Superboy, whoever you are. Every one of these shows has to have Superman waking up and crushing an alarm clock. I'm sure it happens on Superman the Animated Series at some point, right? I might be wrong. I don't know. I remember we see Clark's apartment a lot on Superman the Animated Series, so it's very possible. So Clark is just freaking out here in his dorm room. He tears the blinds off the window because he's got Proto in his head saying, "You will do as I command." And he's stumbling around, and we see this poster of Superboy on the wall, and I'm not sure how much, you know, of this stuff we've seen before we'll see again. You know, I'm not sure what the continuity is as far as odd little pieces of minutia in Clark's dorm room here. But there's a poster of Superboy on the wall of Clark Kent's dorm room. Like, that is an idiotic thing to do, Clark. Like, what are you doing? But even more interestingly than that, though, there's like a goatee painted on him, and there's a word bubble drawn on the poster, and says "Just Say Yo," which I'm like, what? Like, I know "Just Say No" was a thing in the 80s because of, you know, drugs and all that, but it says just say yo, and I don't understand. But anyway, so Clark stumbles over to the to like his mirror. He sees that he's got the scratches on his face have gotten worse, and he's going down the same path as that Constantine cosplayer guy was. So he rips open his shirt. He's got his Superman shirt on under there. Superboy shirt, excuse me. The Superboy costume is on under his clothes. Proto's continuing to talk in his head, and then Clark pulls out some bandages and wraps them all around his face for some reason, I guess to cover up the problem, the scratches and all that. But he takes off, out of his dorm room window, and then he crashes into he doesn't have his full faculties. He crashes into a sculpture or something on campus. It's actually it's kind of a cool idea that, he can't control his power, so he's tumbling around, and he just destroys this piece of art, piece of modern art or whatever. Falls into a field. Lana comes over to him. It's like, oh, Superboy, are you okay? I guess she was just, walking around with on campus or whatever. But Superboy's like, oh, get away. I don't want to hurt you. He's really trying to fight the magic here. But again, I don't understand why his face is wrapped in these bandages. And then we keep cutting back to Proto looking in his crystal ball, and it is just like the cheesiest, worst thing. Like, seriously, imagine Rita Repulsa on the Power Rangers, like, just cutting back to that continuously. It's just not good at all. See, Power Rangers, another topical reference, guys. Anyway, Superboy's fighting this, the voices in his head here, but Lana has seen that something is clearly wrong with Superboy, so she goes to Brimstone's house. How she found his place, I don't know. Maybe she called him and he gave her his address, because his business card, his very helpful business card, the phone number appeared on it, but not the address. So she goes up to this this trailer, really cheap looking trailer, very small trailer, but the motorcycle is parked outside, so we know it's Brimstone's. She knocks on the door, and apparently it's not a trailer, it's a TARDIS, because she opens up the door, and there's, like, a mansion inside. There's, like, a piano, and an aquarium, and a cello, all signs, a spiral staircase, right? All signs of, affluence in the 80s, right? So she goes in there, and Brimstone comes on down, because she's found his laboratory at this point, and, he's making magic potions and stuff. And Brimstone, he's no longer wearing his T-800 outfit. He's legit wearing, I swear, they probably just took his wardrobe from Miami Vice, because he's wearing, slacks and a just very gaudy Hawaiian shirt. So they talk about what's going on with Superboy, that he's been affected. And, of course, they know there's a 24-hour time limit on this. So Brimstone he pulls out some medicine. And Lana's like, what are those? He says, some of these powders can cure Superboy, and others can kill him. And Lana's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. She has this great expression on her face. Like, dude, what are you doing? But he's like, please. A magician never shares his secrets. And he asks her to wait outside. So you think there's going to be some kind of, like, passage of time or something? Like, maybe we'll cut back to see what Superboy or Proto are up to. We don't. We just kind of crossfade to... we crossfade to a shot of presumably Brimstone and Lana's stunt doubles on a motorcycle, because they're truly riding on a street. This is clearly a motorcycle driving on a street. So good job there, show. But then we cut to the actual actors, and they are clearly on a blue screen. I assume at the time, nowadays it'd be green screen. Back then it's probably blue screen, and it is so bad. It is like James Bond 60s level bad rear projection. And I know they're on a budget here, but it's just so bad. Brimstone now has like a bazooka. I mean, he's back into full T-100 regalia, and he has a black turtleneck, which is like, again, very 80s, right? They're talking about what their next play is going to be. And Lana's like, so all that stuff in your trailer, use it to fight magic and evil magic. And Brimstone's like, yes, I've dedicated my life to it. And she's like, why? And then some proximity alarm turns on his motorcycle, and we don't get the answer. It's going to be some kind of big reveal at the end, I guess. But it's Superboy. And not a bird, not a plane, it's Superboy. He swoops down and picks up the motorcycle. And if you thought the special effects were a little awkward before, again, don't want to be too hard on him, because there is some good, look, I gotta say, there is some good wire work in here, you know, when Superboy lands and takes off and stuff like that. It was the same crew that had worked on the Christopher Reeve films, so, you know, of course, Superboy's produced by the Salkinds, who produced those films. So, I mean, a lot of the same special effects team is doing stuff, I mean, like, they can't even do Superman on TV today, right? So it's very ambitious of them to have a Superboy television show. So, good on him, but gosh, some of these effects, man. So we have Superboy. He picks up the motorcycle with Brimstone and Lana on it, brings them to Proto, who's hanging out in a classic abandoned warehouse. But as he's taking them off the motorcycle, Brimstone sprays Superboy in the face with some purple mist, and he kind of runs off. Looks like that might have cured him. We're not sure yet because he's run off, but Brimstone and Lana go into, you know, this abandoned warehouse, and this door, I mean, Superboy busts through this door. It's actually a pretty cool effect. This giant steel door, he busts through and knocks Brimstone over, and they start to fight a little bit. I was wondering here, like, is Lana gonna say that, no, Superboy, you're better than this. You have to fight it. You have to be great again. You know, like Superman 3 and Ricky. You're just in a slump. You know, I wondered if it was gonna be that kind of deal, but it's not. Brimstone just starts shooting magic potions at Superboy, knocks him through a door this time, so he's incapacitated. And then, you know, Proto pops up here, and he looks like if you ever, I guess, I don't know, like in your head, if you think of what Galileo looked like, that's what Proto looks like here. Bill Lugosi dressed up as Galileo, and he's just talking with this ridiculous accent, and it's so, just so bad. Like I feel like, I guess this is what they were going for, because, you know, it's all, hey, it's comic book fun sorcery, guys. But seriously, costumes and acting choices could have seriously improved this episode. I mean, Brimstone, he's fine. I mean, because, I mean, Philip Michael Thomas, I mean, he's doing what he does, and he has a lot of charm. So that's fine, but this Proto guy is just, seriously, he's a Power Ranger villain. He's straight out of Power Rangers. Straight out of, like, a Wishbone episode. It's just, it's really embarrassing, just the way he looks. And then, again, the nails. He's got the long nails. But anyway, Proto tells Brimstone, I will defeat you, Brimstone, just as your father defeated mine. So I guess that's the big reveal, that it's, like, this family legacy rivalry going on here. So Brimstone and Proto have a wizard battle at this point. And it's pretty much what you expect a wizard battle on, you know, late 80s, early 90s budget. Not that impressive. You know, I make fun of the Fellowship of the Ring wizard battle between Magneto and Count Dooku in Lord of the Rings 1. But, you know, at least it was done with some, I don't know, with some class. You know, this just has some pretty cheesy video effects, and what it really made me think of is Key and Peele had this great skit about, you know, there's a trope in fiction, and it's called the Mystic Negro, and what that is, you know, a person of color whose only reason to exist is to help solve a non-person of color's problems, right? I mean, you think of, like, The Legend of Bagger Vance, for example, right? Where Will Smith is like, oh, well, let me just help you with the golf swing, you know, that kind of thing. Or even, you know, even The Shining, right? Where Scatman Crothers, this character, right? In The Shining, I'm talking about the 1980 film with Jack Nicholson now. He's just there to save the day, you know what I mean? He doesn't save the day, but that's his purpose, right? He knows more than what's going on. He's attuned to the environment. I mean, I love Star Trek, The Next Generation, but Guinan, right? She's a great character, but that's what she is, right? She's that character. So it's just, you know, it's a trope in fiction. So Key and Peele, being the comedy geniuses that they are, they make fun of this trope, because they just have this skit where, like, there's this white guy in this, you know, office, and he's on the phone with his wife, and she's leaving him, his life's falling apart, but one of them comes in, and they're like the garbage man, and they're like, oh, here to pick up your garbage, and then the guy's garbage can is so full, he dumps it out. It's like, oh, sure feels good to dump that garbage. I suppose that's why we get it so full. You know, all these little phrases you would hear in these kinds of stories. But then the other one comes in, you know, Key being one, Peele being the other one. The other one comes in, and he's like the coffee repairman. He's like, oh, I'm here to fix your copier. And he tells the white guy, he's like, sometimes it's not things that are broken. It's the way we've been treating them that needs to be fixed. It's just so good. It's just so spot on to what these platitudes that they write for these characters, you know. And so they both notice that each other are there, and they have this crazy, just mystic Negro battle. It's so funny. And I just recommend you all check it out. Now, Key and Peele is on Hulu. So Hulu, you know, it's you know, kind of a brother or sister service to Netflix. I do recommend Hulu because it does have Smallville on it. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Smallville, Smallville is kind of like the spiritual successor to Superboy. You know, it's about a young Superman. I mean, he doesn't fly or wear a costume. I mean, I don't know how you... I mean, the show went on for 10 years, and as I understand it, he never was Superman, which is odd to me. I mean, people give Superboy a hard time because he's like a 30-year-old running around in a costume. At least he's wearing a costume, you know? I mean, what's his name? Tom Welling? How old was he when he was playing? What was he, like 25? He's playing a freshman in high school? That's ridiculous. So you're telling me he's 35 by the time that show's over, and he's still not Superman? That is ridiculous, okay? I mean... think about this, right? I mean, like who is more Superman? The guy flying, even though he's called Superboy, Gerard Christopher in the show, like he's flying around wearing a costume doing Superman things. He's just called Superboy. And then Smallville, what was this guy wear, like a leather jacket or a trench coat, or does he even have glasses? I've seen a few pictures where he has glasses. That's like the very end of the show. Like, we have legit dual identity Clark Kent Superboy here. I mean, what's more accurate to the... What's more true to the character, guys? I ask you. Yes, the production values are... Geez. Anyway, I'm going on Smallville right here. Maybe I should have my own podcast on Smallville, right? But, I mean, that'd be for 10 years. I don't know if I have the time or the interest, really, to do for that show for 10 years. Are you kidding? Anyway, all that being said, don't want to talk down to it. There might be some good stuff on there, guys. Go judge it for yourself. But it's on Hulu. But more importantly, Key and Peele's on Hulu. And that's what you need to check out. In fact, you need to get out and see Get Out. Yeah, see what I did there? Because Jordan Peele from Key and Peele, that's his directorial debut. Amazing film. Amazing film. Just don't read about it. Don't find anything about it. Just watch a trailer. Go out and see why you still can. That's amazing. We're tying in all the current events right now. Well, that was a tangent, but I hope you enjoyed that. But so back to the episode at hand. Brimstone and Proto are just kind of shooting 80s special effects at each other. Brimstone does this kind of like somersault. I wonder if that was like a Miami Vice thing they were throwing in there. Just it looked kind of out of place. But yeah, this is like, you know, you're reading rainbow transitions. Yeah, kind of special effects they're throwing at each other here. So this is going on. It's incredibly cheesy, not that exciting. Superboy has recovered to this point though, and he sees that Brimstone's kind of on the rope. So he rushes over to Proto, and he picks up this big bag of magic potions. And Proto warns him, like, you don't know what that's gonna do. And Superboy says, there's only one way to find out. And he crushes it right in front of Proto, who has Lana in his grasp at this point. But fortunately, it doesn't affect Lana. It only affects Proto. I mean, he blows it at Proto, but there's no way it's not going to get on Lana. But I guess it's just magic affecting magic. I'm not really sure. But Proto really just disintegrates at this point in energy. And that's it, and they're like, oh gosh, we killed him, uh-oh. I mean, Lana seems pretty shocked that Superboy would have killed someone, because as we all know, Superman would never kill anyone. But this kind of like the Obi-Wan Kenobi thing, where the only thing left is his robes, and You know, Superboy rushes over. He doesn't quite do the Darth Vader thing. He doesn't poke it with his boot. I was kind of hoping for that. But so they're all, I mean, Lana and Superboy both like, whoa, we just killed a guy. This just got hardcore, kids. Broomstone's like, hey, don't worry about it. He's been dead for 200 years. He was just too stupid to stay that way. And then he disappears in a flash of light. I mean, Brimstone thinks that's a real zinger. Because he even after he disappears, you hear the echo of his laughter. Lana and Superboy kind of embrace, and that's the end of the episode. It kind of ends on an ominous note. I mean, it would have been interesting to see Brimstone come back, because I think, you know, to fight, maybe he could have been like, you know, well, they haven't quite done it this way, but if on Arrow, if they really wanted to incorporate Constantine in a notable way, he could have been the guy that Oliver calls in to deal with magical things. You know, I was mentioning the Constantine cosplayer here. I guess that stuff is on my mind. But on, you know, on Arrow, the show that's on CW currently, you know, the character of Oliver Queen and the character of Constantine, John Constantine, have a friendship, and he's called on his services to help him out, and then maybe that could have, Brimstone could have been that character in Superboy. Now I know Superboy, you know, it's episodic, it's not like arcs and stuff like that, but there are, you know, there are many recurring characters throughout the show, and they could have done that. I mean, it's not like Philip Michael Thomas was doing that much, other than, you know, being on Zorro and Swamp Thing, right? But anyway, that's the episode. The villain is defeated. There's no more, you know, negative effects from any magical scratches and all that. And that's the end of Brimstone.
You killed him.
You didn't kill him, Superboy. He was already dead for over 200 years. Only he was too stupid to stay dead.
Brimstone got a 7.1 out of 10. On IMDb, and the Superman homepage has no review for Brimstone. They stopped 5 episodes into season 2 of Superboy and never finished. So, maybe one day they'll they'll pick up where they left off. Nightmare Island was the last episode that they reviewed on the Superman homepage of Superboy. So yeah, for me, if I were going to rate this episode, I would, this is tough, because the production values are, I mean, for the magic battles and stuff like that, are pretty mediocre. The acting was just terrible, as far as I went to the villain of the piece, Proto. And I didn't mention the actor, he's played by Carlos Sestero, and again, we have someone who was in Miami Vice. So, it's like, this. Like I said, they could have renamed this episode Miami Vice, I guess. I wonder who they cast first, right? I wonder if they got Philip Michael Thomas and said, hey, who else do you know? Who can we get in here? Or do they cast these other guys like, hey, God, do you think we can get Philip Michael Thomas? You think you guys can call on a favor and get him on? But all that to say that Carlos Estero, his filmography is shorter than the other guys. I mean, he was in an episode of Kojak. He was in Scarface. He was in an episode of The Equalizer. Yes, that was a TV show before it was the movie with Denzel Washington. He was in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, as a munitions man. I got to keep my eye out for him. You know, I don't know if it was direction. I don't know if, like, the script described him in such a, you know, a flamboyant way that he would just ape Bela Lugosi's Dracula performance. Like I said, the guy looks like Bela Lugosi. Go, you know, I would say go look up a picture, but I don't know if you'd be able to find one. But that, more than anything else, just the Power Ranger performance sinks any kind of weight this episode might have had. And it's tough. It's tough to, I mean, they only have 30 minutes in these shows, and they were trying to introduce, I mean, the protagonist of this episode is Brimstone, right? I mean, he's the episode's named after him for good reason. I mean, Superboy's taken out of it. you know, probably about a third of the way through. So, you know, Philip Michael Thomas, like I said, he's got some suave to him. You know, I like it. But overall, gosh, I'm gonna have to give it a D. So, better luck next time, Superboy. But onto our series tally board then. We have a plus one for episode titles set in episode. Of course, you know, whenever we have these characters whose name is the episode title, of course it's going to be said. So we have a plus one for that. You know, hospital visits, we saw Andy get, like, loaded into an ambulance. I mean, that just gets real messy, though, because you had all those people. Are they all going to go? I didn't really get a good count of them all. So since we didn't physically go to the hospital, I am going to give it a pass. You know, under the influence. See, this is tough, you know, because we got mind control count and we got under the influence. I believe that this episode really count is under the influence because it's magic, right? It's hard to really define where mind control begins and under the influence ends. And then, you know, as we go on through these episodes, that's going to be more and more of a conversation. So I'm gonna say this is under the influence. Now, the other question is, where do we define under the influence, right? Because Brimstone, he put the cop and Lana under the influence there. I mean, they drew attention to it. Like, he did the whole, like, wide eye thing. And so I'm gonna count those. So that's two for Brimstone there, but we get two for Proto, because we had Proto had not only Constantine cosplayer under the influence, but also Superboy. So that's a total of four for under the influence there. So just a quick rundown there. We had plus one for episode title set in episode, and plus four for under the influence. And then, of course, the Bechdel test. That was a fail, unfortunately, because, you know, Lana was really the only female character with dialogue, and she did not share any scenes with any other female characters, so that is a fail there. So that was this week's episode. They've been on, you know, a couple episodes now where they've had this, horror? It's certainly not horror. I mean, maybe if you're five, you find it scary. But, you know, this, and then, of course, last week was Run, Dracula, the Run, so that's a couple episodes in a row, you know, about vampires and magic and stuff like that. You know, interesting enough, you know, last week's episode, and I didn't mention it, but there's, you know, it's about the character Byron. There's an episode of Smallville, apparently, where, you know, there's a guy that, his name Byron, he can't be in the sun, much like Byron in Run, Dracula, Run being a vampire, he can't be in the sun either. So, I mean, this Smallville show, right? I mean, I know you got 10 seasons to fill, but that was like in their second season. Are you already taking ideas from Superboy? Come on, guys. I mean, you know, I hate to think how repetitive they got in later years if that's what they're doing that early in the show. But anyway, all that to say that, you know, next week, very exciting. Abandoned Earth, part one of a two-parter of Abandoned Earth and Escape to Earth. In these episodes, Jor-El and Lara come to Earth in search of their son, Kal-El. Of course, you know, Superboy. Now, very interesting casting here, right? Just to tease a little bit, we'll be talking about next time. Jor-El, played by George Lazenby, okay, of James Bond fame. The Brandon Ralph of the James Bond movies, if you will, because he played James Bond in one film, On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Very underrated James Bond film because it's not Sean Connery. This movie's wedged into a couple of Sean Connery movies, as Connery had left and he came back and he left again. But George Lazenby was the first replacement James Bond, and you know, whenever recasting is always tricky business. And you know, again on Hulu, there's going to be Hulu should pay me a plug for this episode. But there's going to be a very fascinating documentary about George Lazenby coming out. It premiered at some film festivals this year, and it's just George Lazenby talking about, you know, his life, why he, you know, how he got the role, why he ended up leaving the role of James Bond. He's a very interesting guy, and it's like his life story in his own words. So I'm sure there's some self embellishment there, but we'll keep you posted on that, because I think that's just a fascinating, he's a fascinating guy. It's a fascinating story. I'm a big James Bond fan as well, and it's gonna be released on Hulu, so we'll keep you posted. But on her Majesty's Secret Service, guys, for real, if you haven't seen it, check it out. A lot of people say it's their favorite James Bond movie, which is, it's high praise. And Teddy Savalas is Blofeld in that film. Would have been a perfect Lex Luthor. I mean, bald, for one, right? What a concept for Lex Luthor to be bald. I mean, gosh, even in Superboy, right? he's not bald, at least in the first season. I mean, Sherman Howard had a bald cap. Scott Wells had a bald cap in the season one finale. But, you know, Telly Savalas would have been an excellent Lex. I can just imagine him going up against Christopher Reeve in the 70s. That would have been incredible. But anyway... Tangents and sidetracks. So George Lazenby is Jor-El. I mean, what more do you want, right? And then Lara, you know, Superboy's Kryptonian mother, played by Britt Eklund, and she was Mary Goodnight in The Man with the Golden Gun. Okay, so again, another James Bond connection. I don't know what it is with these guys, but so there's that. And then on top of that, if that wasn't enough, right, we get Salome Gems as Martha Kent. Okay, so Salome Gems, probably most famous in nerd circles, as playing the female changeling in Deep Space Nine, a major, major character in Deep Space Nine. And then Jonathan Kent, played by Stuart Whitman. Now, as far as, you know, Geek Craig goes, he has the least of all four of the actors I mentioned. You know, James Bond, does that count as geek? I guess. I don't know. It has a fandom, right? So that's why I categorize it that way. But yeah, Stuart Whitman, very long list of credits. Very impressive. I mean, he was in, you know, movies with John Wayne and it just incredible list, right? Just nothing that really jumped out to me the way that these three guys. We got James Bond, we got a Bond girl, and we got the female changeling from, you know, basically the leader of the Dominion. Spoilers. For Deep Space Nine. So, wow. I mean, what an all-star cast. So, really looking forward to discussing those episodes. And they're generally accepted as some of the series' best. So it'll be good to pick me up after these last couple have been kind of rough. But again, I'm not really big on the magic and the vampires and werewolves and ghosts and stuff like that. I mean, that's more like fantasy horror. And like, I mean, I like Superman just in general because it's sci-fi adventure, right? I mean, that's what it is. Sci-fi action adventure. That's where Superman is best. Yeah, you get magical characters like Mixes Piddalick or Mixaplick or whatever, you know. I've always said Mixaplick. I don't know why. I don't know where that comes from. But hey, at least if I pronounce it wrong, he'll never appear, right? So I got that going for me. But anyway, so that's been our discussion this week on Brimstone. If you're in the mood now to go watch Miami Vice, go check it out. I'd be interested to see if it ages, how well it ages and holds up, especially compared to Superboy here. But yeah, that's going to do it for us this week. And thank you so much for listening. If you want to find me out there on the internet, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm on there tweeting about all kinds of, you know, Superman, Star Trek, all kinds of stuff. You know, that's my jam, right? Sports. I mean, I have a wide variety of interests, as you guys know. It is, as like one of my college baseball, Key and Peele, I don't know what other rant, James Bond. How many rants have I had in this episode? I don't know, but yeah, like as I said, next week we'll be back talking about Abandoned Earth. But until then, always hold on to Superboy.
Viacom.